Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
Our guest is Dr. Jill Seiler. Jill served as a superintendent of Gunter ISD for nearly 10 years and now serves as a deputy executive director for professional learning for the Texas Association of School Administrators, TASA. Jill has been serving as an educator for 25 years, beginning her career as a high school social studies teacher and a coach before she became a campus and district leader. Jill has a passion for impacting others and has been a frequent speaker to teachers and leaders alike. Jill's first book, Thrive Through the Five, was released in 2020 and focuses on how to thrive through the most challenging seasons. Welcome to the podcast, Jill.
Thank you. It's so great to be with you today.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to pull out.
Well, you know, I've been in public education for 25 years and in all the roles, from paraprofessional to teacher and coach to campus administrator, central office and superintendent. And so I've had my entire career in the trenches. I loved my time as the classroom teacher, loved my time as a, you know, first year and new campus administrator and of course in central office. But I think I'll talk about just being in the trenches most recently, which was in my role as a superintendent. I had an interesting experience where my very first year of being a superintendent and my very last year were kind of end capped with crises. I walked in my very first year into a significant financial crisis. It was about 10 years ago and our state had cut funding and a lot of things had happened that put us in that situation. And I ended my career in COVID, which of course was really challenging to lead through that. But I'll go back to the very first crisis as a superintendent, which was that financial situation. And coming in as a new superintendent, and not having that expertise in the area of finance, which is where this crisis was happening, you really had to just rely on your gut instincts and reaching out to others and just making sound decisions. And I hated that we went through that that whole challenge as I came into the superintendency, but I'll also tell you that that laid the groundwork for a lot of things. Number one, right? I definitely struggled with some questions and some doubts as to whether I was really ready for that position. And so being faced with such a really intense struggle at the very beginning and then leading through it successfully kind of built that confidence as I went. And I really learned that through that struggle and that challenge, that some of those times were the most impactful in my leadership, not because it built my leadership, but it revealed who I was as a leader. But also just because I was able to lead in a way that aligned with my core values. And so, yes, we're going through this really hard time. And in that year, I ended up losing almost 20% of my staff. It was significant. But in that process, was able to walk them through it and be really clear in my communication, be very transparent with where we're going, but also to lead with heart and to understand that this was a really difficult time. I always say, you know, anyone could have led through that particular challenging season, but the way that I led through it was one that I'm proud of because, you know, we cried together and mourned together, but we also sought hope together. And in the end, we're stronger for it.
And, you know, I think looking back on that and knowing that, you know, that helped you kind of, you know, in that situation, you know, the trench story is something you can look back on and realize that it wasn't so bad after all. And I think that's how we learn from those situations, like you said.
For sure.
So tell me, yeah, you told me that you had all these different positions starting as a para. So talk to me a little bit about moving from the teacher into administration and maybe what types of schools you worked at as a principal and then what got you into this superintendency.
Yeah. So I went to college with a really, you know, deep and meaningful major, which was politics and philosophy, which prepared me for nothing. I always joke, but perhaps it prepared me for everything. And so coming out of that undergrad experience, really with that kind of degree, I knew I had to go on. So I wanted to go on into, you know, government, international affairs and do all the things. But right before I went to grad school, I was coaching and teaching at an FCA camp, like a Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp over the summer, and completely fell in love. And so came back, I was at the University of Texas at Austin for grad school, and walked into that graduate, advisor's office and said, I think I need to make a change. Got alternatively certified. I had already been working as a paraprofessional and a volunteer coach at that time, and went into teaching full-time and absolutely loved it. I was one of those that really never saw myself out of the classroom. Like, I loved teaching. I got into this business because I loved kids. And I just assumed that everyone else was the same way that I was and taught the same way that I did, and all of those things. And so as I had people around me encourage me to go into leadership, I was hesitant to leave that classroom, but eventually did and learned that I loved that. Like, I loved teachers and I loved pouring into teachers and supporting them through their best days and their hardest days. I actually never served as a principal. I was an assistant principal and an associate principal. So part of my story was having to make the really hard decisions. I always talk about, it's not about, what job is best for you. It's about what job is best for you in the context of your life. And right as I was about at that stage to become a principal, I became pregnant with my first child and had the opportunity to go to central office. And so made that decision because I felt that that was going to be better for my family at that moment. And then picked up my doctorate along the way because I knew I would have kind of that gap there that I would need to fill. And so, my career through leadership, from teaching into leadership, was really one that was, I was so fortunate to have so many people around me who poured into me, who saw further in me than I saw myself, and who encouraged me to take that next step. When I got to the campus level, I never wanted to leave to go to central office, but again, had people who encouraged me to consider it. And then when I went to central office, absolutely loved it. Did not consider a path to the superintendency, but again, had people around me who just continued to encourage me to think about it. And I loved the 10 years that I spent as a superintendent.
Now you're working with leaders and superintendents in the state of Texas. And so how is that different than working in central office? And do you travel across the state? I know you speak at conferences a lot. So how does that look different? Is it a full-time position or is it more in a consulting role?
Yeah. So again, similar to the theme, if you would have asked me 1 year ago what my plans held for me, I would have said, I'm going to be the superintendent of my school district until I retire. Just love where we're at. And this opportunity came up to work for our state organization. It's kind of one of the branches of AASA, our National Superintendent Organization. It's the Texas version. And so I stepped out and took that big step of faith. And so I'm leading professional learning statewide. So I work with everyone. We run professional learning for assistant principals all the way to experienced superintendents. But my primary focus within the organization is our aspiring superintendents, our first-time superintendents. I work with a group called the Future Ready Superintendent Leadership Network, which is about 250 educators that come together to try to make their schools the very best for their students. And then work with our national or our statewide conferences. And I am absolutely loving it.
And I think the more people we have in those types of roles that helps train and, gives tips to those people who are new in the role, the better they'll be. So let's shift a little bit and talk about your book, Thrive Through the Five, which talks about how to thrive in the most challenging times. So I know you included a little bit about your the financial crisis as a superintendent, but is this book for any educator? Is it mostly for people in leadership roles? And what can people take away from that?
Well, first I would say that, one of the books that I'm reading right now is Lead From Where You Are, which is by Joe Sanfilippo. And he makes that compelling just point that every single person is a leader. The teacher is a leader in her classroom as her students are looking up to him or her. And so every one of us is leading from where we're at. Like, that should be our aspiration, is to have impact on others, regardless of what our role is. We're not defined by our role, our position, or our title. We're defined by the things that we do and how we impact others. And so, as I think about my book, certainly, if you're aspiring to go into leadership or you're in leadership, it is really going to resonate with you. But I've had many people tell me who are inside education and outside education in a multitude of roles that it really impacts them as well. I wrote the book because I love what I do. And I've loved every role I've had in public education. And I tell people all the time, I love my job like 95% of the time, maybe not the past couple of years. It's been really challenging. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I tell people all the time, like, I love my job 95% of the time. And they're like, that's fantastic. But what I don't talk about a whole lot, and what I don't think that we talk about enough, is that there is a small part of all of our work and our lives that is really, really difficult. And I don't know about you, but for me, you know, my mantra was just, you know, how do we get through those? How do we just survive those moments? Like, this too shall pass. And then COVID kind of came around and like laughed at us. Like, 3 years, 2 years later, we're still in this pandemic and dealing with the after effect of that. So how do you do more than just survive in those moments? How do you thrive? And that's what I wanted to write the book about. How do you lead when things are really, really difficult?
Yeah. And I think, you know, looking back and realizing there's so much that has been a silver lining and that we've learned through the pandemic and other challenging times, like you mentioned in your trench story. But yeah, this is definitely a tool, like you said, for people in all types of roles. And I think pointing out that you are a leader wherever you are, right? You can be a para working with kids and you're a leader. You also do a lot of professional development, and you had a recent conference with TASA. So tell me how that went. And you told me in the pre-chat you all had 7,000 attendees. So that was quite a lot for back in person. And then maybe some upcoming professional development that you have planned.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Late spring and early summer.
Yeah, so I'll talk about it from two perspectives, one that I do professionally and then the work that I do personally. So professionally, with TASA, just an incredible organization. Our state conference is one of the very, very best. We had nearly 7,000 people come this past January. We had John Maxwell keynote and Inky Johnson speak on day two, George Kuro speak on day three, just an incredible lineup, just hitting everything from leadership to inspiration to innovation. And then a number of our districts sharing out their best practices. And so we really have enjoyed just reaching and supporting our educators. We also run a joint conference, partner with our school board association to do a conference in the fall. So we're getting ready for that. And then kind of reimagining what a summer conference might look like. And so we're excited to roll that out in the next couple of weeks. And so I am super fortunate to be able to just have a hand in impacting leaders who are now in the trenches. That's been an interesting part of this work is, you know, I talk a lot about the quote from Theodore Roosevelt, who talks about the arena, right? That those who are in the arena and who are doing the work, and he talks about that we need to be daring greatly because we're in that. And Brené Brown makes this note about, you know, there are those who are in the arena doing the work and then those who are outside. And sometimes some of the challenging parts of this leadership work that we do is that we get so much feedback from those who are outside the arena, who have no idea the impossible context that we're being asked to operate in, right? Even in discussions with you, as you've, we've struggled to schedule this podcast because your school has needs that you're being called and asked to do so many things. It has been a really, really challenging time. So it has been great just to have a small impact on those who are in the trenches, who are doing the hard work day in and day out. And so that's on the professional side. And then on the personal side, one of the benefits of taking this role is it's allowed me a little bit more freedom to do the things that I have also find incredibly fulfilling, which is to write and to speak and to continue to impact others. And so I've had a chance to go all over from Oregon to Colorado to Oklahoma to I'm headed to Maine, Virginia, Nebraska to share my message around Thrive Through the Five and maybe taking baby steps on a little book number two, which we're not going to talk about, but I'm really excited about that work as well.
Yeah. And I think that's great when you're able to move into a position where, you know, you're helping people who are inside the trenches, but you know, you're not too far removed from that mm-hmm. arena, right? You were a superintendent when COVID hit, and you know you're working with people on a daily basis. That you know you see what's going on.
A good friend of mine a good friend of mine, she said that this way. She said, Jill, you're still in the arena. You're just not in the ring. Like, you're in the arena. You're totally right there with them. You're just not in the ring. And I was like, okay, I like that.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. And also you talk a lot about, as women, we often operate with the notion of fear and doubts and a little bit of the imposter syndrome in leadership positions. So what are some tips you would give for women who are trying to break into roles like their principalship or superintendency or some other central office, superintendent cabinet type?
Yeah, such a good question. I was shopping with a friend over the weekend and we were having this conversation and she said, you know, it's just so funny. When we go into teaching as women, it's this noble calling. We have this incredible profession that we're impacting the lives of children. But when we step into leadership, there's a segment of the population that maybe just turns a little bit. No longer is it the noble profession, but there's a little judgment of like, wow, you're going to leadership. And what does that mean for your ability to be a really good mom? And that's always the first point of judgment. And so I think from a societal standpoint, there are definitely things that are out there telling women what it is that they should do and how they should live their lives and what it looks like to be a good mom and a good wife and all of those things. And all of that is true to a degree, right? All of us need to have our priorities. But I think for women, it's super challenging, especially those who are called to have that impact on others. And so I really spent a lot of time just reading and researching into failure and fear and how that impacts us as leaders. I've always believed that, failure is not just something that we endure. It's the thing that can make us great in terms of how we encounter it, deal with it, and grow from it. But there's a huge difference between failure and fear, right? Like failure happens. It's an event. And it might be a super painful event. It might be a private event. It might be a public event, but it's finite in nature. But fear can be ever present. It's that constant what if. What if I'm not being a good mom? What if I'm not being a good leader? What if I don't meet expectations? What if the worst possible outcome comes to fruition? And all of that is fear. And so for us to recognize that, one of my greatest fallacies as a leader, like in my journey, is that I just felt for so long that if I'm feeling this fear, if I'm feeling this doubt, then that must be a sign that I'm not ready for the thing that I feel like I'm being called to. Like, I'm just going to wait for the fear to pass. And once I feel better about it, then I'm going to step out into it. And finally realizing that doesn't happen. Maybe there's those people who operate without fear. Like, I would love to meet that person. But I'll tell you that the people that I talk with and that I work with have lots of angst and lots of doubts. And I think that there is a piece that is particular for female. If you read the research and it talks about, if a guy reads a job description and can do 50%, he's like, I'm all in. And the woman can read it in like 98.5%. She's like, oh no, gotta wait. I'm not there all the way yet. There is that piece. So how do you act in the midst of fear? And one thing I would say is just to recognize that fear does not always equate to the fact that you're not ready for something. That just because you're feeling anxious, that you have doubts about your ability. Shoot, when I thought about becoming a superintendent, I mean, the list of fears was a mile long. I didn't know if I was ready for the job. And I wasn't, by the way. There were so many things that you just don't know. You don't know what you don't know. I didn't think I was going to like the work. I didn't want to uproot my family for this job that I didn't know if I could do or that I would like. And I didn't know whether or not I could be a mom and a superintendent and do both of those effectively. And I think realizing that if you didn't have those fears to begin with, specifically around balance, like those are actually a good sign because it shows that you care so much about the organization that you're serving and the people that you love the most. And that's always going to be in conflict. So my encouragement to others as they think about their own failures and their own fears is to remember that fear is part of it. And our job is to learn how to act and lead in the midst of it and recognize that it's not going to go away. So we can't just wait till it stops. We have to take that step even in the midst.
They're such encouraging words because, I see myself in some of those statements that you had, and I know many women, feel exactly the same way. And I think it's one of those things that we don't often talk about in leadership circles or, just at the school or in, people that are in the principal prep program, that it's going to be there. Right. And we have these, we have that we have our desire to serve our family along with our school and, you know, those two passions. So yeah, you hit it. You hit it right on the ball. So as we wrap up the podcast, out of everything we talked about, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I think, and I'll branch out, and it's not necessarily something I've said to this point, but I think if there's one thing I would want listeners to recognize, it's that what we know and what we do is important, right? Those areas of expertise. Many of us are in the classroom. We have incredibly deep pedagogical experience. Like, we know what teaching and learning looks like. Many of us are rising into leadership, and we might focus on curriculum and instruction and know what that looks like. And that leadership and that expertise is important. But what really makes you stand out as a leader in whatever arena that you're in is how you do the work. What you do is important, but how you do it is critically important. And our actions matter. So the way that we conduct ourselves, the way that we have hard conversations, it's not about just being nice, right? That's a part of it. We still have to have high expectations and hold others accountable, but we can do that in a way that allows them to maintain dignity. The decisions that we make, the choices that we make, the conversations that we have, it's about how we do this work. You know, people have asked me, you know, just being a superintendent and going through the things that I've gone through, from financial crisis or leading through COVID, you know, were those the hardest things? And yeah, they were the hardest things, but I'll tell you, they were also the best things, not because of the really sad and challenging things that happened throughout it, but in terms of how proud I was of my leadership during those moments. When we look at ourselves and realize that it's a privilege to sit in the seats that we sit in and to get to do this work, whether it's teaching a classroom every day, or whether it's leading a campus, or whether it's leading a district in a school community, those hard moments become part of it. It is the privilege to sit in that seat and to make those decisions. I hated that our district was going through all of the things that we went through, but I'll tell you that not only was I proud of the decisions that I made, but I was so thankful to have the seat to do that and to lead this community that I loved through that hardest thing. And so what we do is important, but how we do it matters. And all of us can have an impact no matter where we're at.
So important to remember how we do it. Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
So I am on all those social media platforms. My handle is at Jill M. Seiler, and my website is jillmseiler.com. I'd love to connect with you further.
So much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure having you, Mom.
Great. It was so great to be here. Thank you so much.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.